You know, Ed and I have known each other for a long time, and I saw him when he came in the rooms, and so that kind of history with men is very special. It's really, you know, there was a little gap in our friendship during that time. It was, you know, been 34 years since he came in here. His anniversary was Friday, so yeah. So I had the opportunity to watch him in his recovery, and the coolest thing about watching him today is how he helps so many people. I mean, his phone stop doesn't go; it just goes all. He talks on the phone all day long to addicts all day long, just trying to help somebody. You know, it's incredible. You know, it's something that I wish I could do more of. You know. I'm supposed to be sponsoring Ed, but a lot of times he's sponsoring me when I need something. He's always been there. So he's got a great message. You know, if you hang around the campground, you can come over and hear a lot of stories if you want to hear a bunch of stories. But tonight, so today, you're going to hear a really good message. Thanks for it. Here's Ed.
Drink holder. Ah, thank you. Thank you.
I'm an addict. My name's Ed. Yay! Grateful to be clean and in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous today. I'm from the New Dominion area of Narcotics Anonymous. My home group is the Into the Light group in Midlothian, Virginia. And, man, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I do. You know, I want to thank the program committee for asking me to share yesterday. And that's a good thing, because when I get asked to share like this, I get really, really nervous. And then, you know, right before I share, I finally finish praying, and I relax. And then it's real hard to shut me up. So, you guys, keep a check on me, okay? I've had so much fun this weekend. And fun was something I had stopped having using. Now, I don't want to lie to anybody out there and say using was horrible the whole time. In fact, I think maybe drugs kept me from killing myself when I was young. Because I had, I was one insecure kid, you know, and you know, people talk about the low self-esteem. I'm not sure if I had any. And I felt so separate from the universe. You know, I had always felt really alone. And I, you know, I don't know why, other than the disease of addiction was already active in my life, you know, because, you know, I had parents that loved me, and it wasn't until I was older and had kids I realized how blessed I had been with the parents I had, you know. I came into these rooms, you know, blaming stuff on my parents, you know, and today that's real, real clear to me that, all that shit was me, you know. They did the best they could with what they knew how. You know, insecure kid. I'm going to date myself when I tell you this. I was at a thing called a sock hop. And it's a dance in a school gym where you can't wear your shoes. And some friends of mine, they said, come on, let's go out behind the football field. And I went out there, and they had a bunch of beer. And I chugged some beer. And we went back in the sock hop, and there had been an amazing transformation in the insecure kid. All of a sudden, I felt really relaxed. I felt cool.
And, you know, I started asking girls to dance, and I danced really badly and had a great time. Later that, you know, and I had this thought that I, you know, I'm sure it's occurred to many addicts. I thought, I've found it. This is what I was looking for. And I remember as the evening went on, I thought, God, I bet people feel like this all the time. And I want it to feel like that all the time. I spent the next 16 years chasing that feeling. I'm not sure if I ever got it as good again. But that didn't stop me from chasing it all kinds of places and all kinds of ways. I don't want to talk too much about using, but I do want to say that using got ugly. The last 5 years of my using, it felt like I was using against my will a lot of the time. You know, I would tell myself, I'm going to stop doing this. This is not who I want to be. This is, you know, I got to stop doing this. And I was able to quit. I was able to quit a lot. I just couldn't stay quit, you know. The longest I ever stayed clean before Narcotics Anonymous was 2 weeks. And I have a fabulous forgetter. You know, after 2 weeks, I would forget why I wanted to stop using. And I would think that, you know, it wouldn't hurt. One wouldn't hurt. And we all know what happens with one, you know. It doesn't ever stop there. And So by the time I got to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I hear people come into rooms and, you know, their story says, you know, I love using, you know. I came into the rooms and I was like, damn it. You know, I am really sick of my life. You know, I don't like my life. And, you know, just coming into Narcotics Anonymous and being sick of my life, I didn't stay clean. You know, because I brought my ego with me. You know, I brought a lot of misinformation with me. And I put together an amazing 87 days clean. And I made a mistake. I didn't get a sponsor, you know. And I figured I could figure out how to work the steps. So I did a fifth step with my wife. And the next day she left. She took my car. She took my child, you know. She took my money. And I didn't have the resources not to use over that, you know. I just didn't have it. I remember looking at a list of phone numbers. And I said, I can't call nobody. And I used. And fortunately, that relapse was really, really brief. And I had the first moment of real clarity I think I ever had at the end of that brief relapse. I woke up hot, sweating, laying on a dirty mattress on the floor. And this guy, who I thought was my friend, was telling me, get out. You got to go. Get out of here now. And I rolled off the mattress, and I was looking for something under the mattress that I had put under there that night, and I couldn't find it. And I was struggling, and I was on my hands and knees, and he said, go now. And I said, give me a minute. And he said, you ain't got a minute. Go. And on my hands and knees, I thought, everything they said in the meetings applies to me. And before that point, I had not believed that everything you said in the meetings applied to me. I really just didn't believe it, you know. I thought some of it did, but I was different. When I came back, I tried to explain why I used. And people laughed, you know. And you know, I wasn't sure if they were laughing at me or what, but I know today they were laughing because they knew why I used, you know. And they said, you know, welcome back. We love you, you know. And I wasn't used to hearing that. I really wasn't used to hearing people say, keep coming back. I hung out on Jeff Davis Highway in South Richmond. That was where I hung out and used.
And there are some wonderful places on Jeff Davis Highway, City Motel, the Drifter, you know. And the worst bar on Jeff Davis Highway was called the Zip Inn. And behind the bar, on a white card on the wall, it said, "Banned for Life, Ed Crenshaw." And so I was not used to being told, "Keep coming back, we love you." I am so grateful today for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I came back and I asked a question that I didn't ask the first time, you know. I said, "What do I need to do? Tell me what to do." And things changed for me real quickly. You know, I started taking suggestions. A lot of them reluctantly, and not all of them, but I took some. And if there was an NA thing happening around where I lived, I was there. And I started feeling a part of, you know, and I was still a crazy guy, I was still lying, and, you know, I was just, you know, I didn't have enough self-esteem to be real, but, you know, I was showing up. I was showing up, and I showed up for almost 5 years, and my life really kind of smoothed out. The wife that left me came back, you know, and I got hobbies. Man, I didn't have a hobby in a long time, you know, and I just started having this life that looked kind of manageable from the outside, and I looked way better, you know. I started lifting weights, and, you know, because in the depths of my addiction, I found myself in Chippenham Hospital in the emergency room. A very codependent woman I was living with took me there, and because I couldn't walk up steps anymore. And I was only 21 years old, and I was 6'2", and I weighed 135 pounds, and was very yellow, yellow eyes, you know, this nasty colored skin. And the doctor came, and I was in a cubicle with a curtain around it, and he pulled the curtain back, and he looked at me, and he didn't come in. He said, "I'll be right back," and he closed the curtain. And when he came back, he was wearing a gown and a mask and rubber gloves. And it really dawned on me how I looked, you know. Nobody wanted to touch me, you know. And during that stint in the hospital, the doctor told me, "If you don't stop using drugs and drinking, you're going to die." And the only thing I wanted to know was when, because I wanted to stop using right before I died. And he couldn't tell me. He couldn't tell me when I was going to die. I used for 9 more years. I really admire and respect people who are real organized. That's not me. So you're going to get what you get up here from me. I have a huge file between my ears, but it's just one big file, and it's labeled miscellaneous. And so I'm going to be pulling things out, you know, and throwing them out there. So, but hopefully what you'll get is some of my experience, strength, and hope, you know. And I came to those meetings for almost 5 years. I got a resentment against some people in the program. Imagine that. I decided that that my life was good enough and that I could do it. And I gradually stopped going to meetings, and I would see people on the street, and they'd say, "Hey, you still going to meetings?" And I'd say, yeah, sometimes, you know. And it became less and less and less. And there was a couple of years where I went and picked up a medallion, you know, and a black key tag thing, I would go in the room, and I didn't know people. You know, I was no longer a part of, you know. I might see a couple people I knew, but I didn't feel a part of. And, you know, Jeff said there was a gap in our friendship. There was about an 8-year period where I moved away from Narcotics Anonymous and started managing my own life big time. And I'm here to tell you, me personally, I lost more clean than I ever lost using. I didn't work this program. And this disease took over my life. And, you know, I came in these rooms, I'd never been arrested. First time I was ever arrested, I had 10 years clean. That's another story for another day. But during that eight-year period, my life just went to hell. And but there was this guy. This guy I had sponsored when he was new. And he was still around. Some of y'all know him. His name's Jimmy B. And Jimmy B never went more than 2 weeks during that 8 years from calling me. He would call me and say, "Hey, how you doing? You want to go to a meeting?" For 8 fucking years. Where else do you get friends like that other than in Narcotics Anonymous, you know? And I would always say, "Yeah, no, I'm too busy," or, you know, "I got this going on." And he would start telling me what's going on at area service, and I'd be thinking, "I don't give a shit," you know? And but it kept me connected some kind of way to Narcotics Anonymous. And with almost 13 years clean, maybe I did. I think I did have 13 years clean. I found myself on the way to COP because it hurt so bad being me. And I just didn't want to live like that anymore. And I was looking for some way to stop it. And I was on the way to COP. If you think you don't know how to COP when you got 13 years clean, I'm here to tell you, you still know. You know how to do it. And I was on the way. And I had this thought, one of those other moments of clarity, you know? And what I thought was, this ain't going to be about getting high. This is going to be about dying. And I pulled over in my truck with a bad motor. It's like I tell you, I would lost more clean than I did using. And I sat there crying by the road. And I thought, Jimmy said there's a midnight meeting right down here. And I was late. I went to that meeting. And it was in a basement. And the candles were all lit. And you couldn't see good. And I sat there and I couldn't quit crying. And man, I didn't want to cry. You know, I didn't want to be the guy crying in the damn meeting, you know. But I couldn't quit crying. And when they turned the lights on, I was still crying. And I looked around and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in that room. And they came over and they started hugging me, telling me it was going to be all right. And I ate it up. And I didn't tell them I had 13 years clean. I let them love me, you know. And that was over 21 years ago. And I've been a meeting maker ever since. I've been the guy who stuck around and reluctantly took all these suggestions, you know? When you guys told me when I came around, you said, you're going to have to put as, if you want to stay clean and recover, you're going to have to put as much effort into your recovery as you did in using. And I thought, that shit will never happen, you know? How could that happen? Today, it has happened. It really has. And it took a long time. I'm a slow learner, you know, when it comes to things that help me. I am a slow learner. When it comes to things that hurt me, I got it right away. First time I ever saw anybody inject drugs, I knew how to do it right away. First time I ever saw anybody roll a joint, I knew how to do it right away. But when it came to staying clean, it's taken me a long time to learn how to recover, you know? I'm truly grateful for everybody sitting here because all of y'all helped me stay clean today. You know, this is a we program, you know? Which, you know, this wristband says giving it away. And, man, I've been given a lot this weekend, you know? And, I want to give it away, too. I want to give it back. I want to talk about some things that that came hard for me, like step work. I have done step work with varying amounts of enthusiasm, varying amounts of like honesty, you know. But every bit of it I ever did had a positive effect on my life, you know. And I can only be as honest at whatever point I am in my recovery as I can be, you know. And but I've had all these examples, you know. I look at the people in my life, you know, the men and women in my life that have put energy into this program, and I wanted what they had, you know. Jeff is my sponsor, you know, and I watched him go through the workbook steps twice with his sponsor, and I saw the changes in him, and I wanted it. You know, this is a program of, you know, attraction. And what began to attract me was people who were living lives that they loved and living lives that looked like they felt good, you know. And I have not always felt good clean, you know. But I didn't pick up. You know, if you're new here, man, there's only one thing you got to get right, you know, and keep it right. Don't use no matter what. And then you got a chance. You got a chance at the kind of life that you will see other recovering addicts have who put all their energies into their recovery, you know. And that became very attractive to me. I was saying, you know, I'm old school. You know, when I got clean, they didn't even have some kind of workbook, you know. We did steps different, you know. And this was all, you know, excuse, bullshit, you know. I didn't want to put effort in. I didn't want to do work, you know. And I discovered during some step work that I had something called a sense of entitlement. I wanted shit for free, you know. And I wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or an Indian chief, but I didn't want to go to college, you know. And I wanted all that stuff for nothing. And I didn't know what that was called. I found out it's called a sense of entitlement. And I had it big time. I thought things were supposed to come easy to me. Things were supposed to just be free. And what I've discovered in recovery is that, you know, if you want something good, you got to work for it, you know. And step work is a big piece of the work, you know. I believe there's only several essential things for NA recovery, you know. And the first and most important one is don't pick up no matter what. But you also need to become a part of. You need to get a home group. And I need to find a way to be of service. And there's all kinds of ways to be of service I have discovered, you know, inside of Narcotics Anonymous and outside. We need to get a sponsor and work the steps. And there's this other piece. We need to find a higher power. God, that was a struggle for me. That really was tough for me. I remember my first meeting. I bounce around from being in recovery back to my first meeting. I remember my first meeting, and I looked at people in the rooms, and I thought, "Wow, man, this is a hell of a crowd, you know, weird group." And at the end of the meeting, people were, you know, newcomer people coming up, giving me a hug, and, you know, and what was coming out of my mouth was, "This won't work for me." And they were like, "Why?" And I said, "Because I don't believe in God." And everybody said the same thing, because I said that to four different people, I think, at that first meeting. And they all said, "Hey, that's cool. Keep coming back." You know what I mean? And I'm like, "That's cool. Y'all were just talking about God." You know, and so that was a hard thing for me, because I couldn't, it was just words, you know. And I remember when I found a higher power, the first one, you know, because I've been on a spiritual journey that I am still on. I am still on this spiritual journey, you know. But I remember when I found the first higher power that I recognized. I was sitting in a meeting, and I thought, I feel good. And I thought, this is the best hour of my day. Every day, this is the best hour of my day. This is a power greater than myself. Man, it just, you know, I wanted to tell people I found a higher power, you know? And what I discovered was that I was feeling good before I got to the meeting. And I felt good after the meeting, you know? And I really thought that, you know, I got this higher power, you know? But I have been on this spiritual journey where I've, over the years, I have come to recognize something that I consider a force in the universe that is for good and love. And, you know, if you want to call it God, call it God. I'll call it God with you. But what I know is that when I live in a manner where I practice these spiritual principles of this program, my life is so much better. And when I ask for help, because I will ask this force in the universe for help, you know, and it seems like I always get it. You know, I just forget to ask sometimes. And anyway, you know, like I said, I'm still on the spiritual journey, and I'm glad to be on it. You know, the step work piece was, you know, I did 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. A lot of people do that, you know, I believe. And I've done several 4 steps, and I remember on one of them, Jeff said, I don't know if you have more resentments than most people or if you're just more thorough. You know, I think he was real tired of hearing about my resentments at that point. The good stuff started coming for me later in the steps, you know. After the last 5th step I did, I wanted to do step work. I wanted to move forward. I wanted the good stuff that I believed was coming from that step work, you know. And when I finished the 6th step in that workbook, I called Jeff and I said, hey, I finished the 6th step in the workbook. I answered all the questions. He said, are you all right? I knew what he meant. Because see, the 5th step, you know, I mean, the 4th step, at the end of it, you know, you're like, write down assets and things like that, you know. At the end of the 6th step, I didn't get to write down any assets, you know. It was all my defects, all my shortcomings, and I felt them. I felt them all, you know. At the end of the 7th step, my sponsor said, I want you to write your list of defects, and beside each one, write the spiritual principle that might counteract it. And he said, I want you to put it in your pocket and keep it with you. Man, I needed a visual aid, and I guess he knew that, you know. I put that thing in my pocket, and I carried it for a long time until it came apart. And I realized that I didn't even have to take it out and look at it. You know, when I was acting on one of my defects, just knowing that it was in my pocket made me think about the spiritual principle that might counteract that defect. And I'm not saying I did it right all the time. Because for me, this really is about progress, you know. I realize I will never achieve perfection, and that's okay. I'm all right with that because I'm so much better than I was. And that's how I have to gauge this, you know. I don't want to ever forget the last day I used, lying on the front seat of a truck with a bad motor, a different truck with a bad motor than that. And I didn't want to sit up. Because I couldn't look at anybody. It didn't matter if I didn't know you or not. I could not look at anybody. And I never experienced paranoia and aloneness so much ever in my life as that last day that I used. And I don't want to ever feel that again. And I don't want to ever forget it. And that's how I'm not going to have to do that again, because I don't ever want to forget that. I want to share a little bit about 8th and 9th step. Good gosh. You know, one of the spiritual principles that's involved in the 8th step is courage. God darn. I I had never had to exercise that particular level of courage in my entire life, I don't think. You know, I stood before people with guns pointed at me, and, you know, I didn't have to use as much courage then as I did writing that 8-step list. Another spiritual principle that's involved in that 8-step list is compassion. Without compassion, I couldn't write that list. I had to have compassion for those people that I was putting on that list because I wronged them. I wronged them bad. And I had to have compassion for myself or I wouldn't have done the work. You know, and that, I didn't understand these things for a long time, you know, and this is just my truth, you know. It's just how this worked for me. And the 9th step has some spiritual principles involved in it. And one of the big ones is humility. Again, you know, I don't know if I had experienced, I had been that humble ever in my recovery until this last time doing that step, you know, because I had to realize that, you know, if I wanted to live, I had to do what I needed to do. If I wanted to live good, I needed to do this thing. I needed to be willing to make this, just try to make this right. And it was hard because some of that shit couldn't be made right, really. But, you know, again, sponsorship is the backbone of this program, man. If you don't have a sponsor, please get a sponsor. You can't, I couldn't do this thing without help from a lot of people. But I needed to find one person who really was going to help me with the particulars of recovery. You know, and on the 9th step, you know, Jeff said some of these are really important. They're old. This is stuff that, and there were people who were the closest to me in my life. I still owed amends, you know. I used to say, I made amends to my ex-wife. That wasn't amends, that was child support. You know? Anyway, and she was on the top of this list. And we hadn't been together in 20 years. And I was really, really scared about this stuff. And Jeff said, I want you to write down exactly what you're going to say to these 4 people. What you plan to say. So I wrote it down. One of the ones to one of my children, he said, leave that whole middle part out. That doesn't go in there. And that's why we need sponsorship, you know? Because I couldn't see that I was trying to justify, you know, what I had done. I needed to leave that part out. That wasn't appropriate, you know? And I'm so grateful for, you know, having some direction in this stuff. I guess I want to tell you about making amends to my ex-wife. This was freeing. This was some crap I had carried for a long, long time. Because I realized that in our relationship, 90% of the problem was me. And it took me a long time to get past the 10% that was her. I didn't want to make the amends over the 10% that was her. You know, and so anyway, I finally got the courage to do this. Jeff had said, you know, hey, yeah, this is the stuff. You can say this. This is good. So I go to where she works, and she works by herself, and I thought that's somewhere where I can talk to her. And it was real hard to go in there. I thought maybe I was going to throw up or like mess my pants, you know, and because I was scared. And I thought, why are you so scared? You know, this is a 63-year-old tiny little skinny woman. What are you scared of? And what I was scared of was being honest with her for the first time in my life. And it was scary. So I went in there, I got the courage up, and I went in there, and there was this young man sitting at her desk, and I said, where's Susan? He said, she took the day off. I left. It took about 10 more days for me to get my shit together enough to try it again, you know? And So I went in there, and she knows about step work and stuff, but, you know, in a general way. So I told her what I wanted to do, you know, the eighth and ninth step thing, and she was like, okay. And I said, I'm going to read it to you because I don't want to leave anything out. And I think there was like seven things on there that were horrible and long-term. And I had never been honest with her about them. And when I read each one, she just stared. Well, first, before I did it, when I told her I wanted to make amends to her, she said, you're going to die. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you're sick, aren't you? You're sick, you're going to die. I was like, no. It just shocked me, you know. And I said, I just want to live better. But when I read each one, she nodded. She just stared at me and nodded. And then I asked her the questions I was told to ask her, you know. I said, did I leave anything out that I need to make amends for? And she said, no, you covered it. And I said, dude, is there anything I can do to make this right? And she turned around and sat down with her back to me. And I thought, okay, I did it. So I started walking out. And she stood up and said, hey. And I said, yeah. And she said, you didn't know. And I said, know what? She said, I forgave you for that shit a long time ago. I didn't know. I carried guilt and shame that I didn't have to carry for a long, long time. These steps free us. They free us from that stuff. And there's nothing better than that in life. Freedom, you know? NA gave me freedom from active addiction. And so much freedom can come after that. I want to talk about an amends that I started making way before working on this step. My mother got sick. And I guess I'm going to tell you the kind of amends I owed my mother. You know, I was her oldest sibling. My brother and sister are not addicts. And I turned my mother's hair gray while she was in her late 30s, you know. I was a terrible, terrible child. And I remember my father had passed away, and it scared me to death because I was the oldest child. And I thought I was going to have to take over his job. And I was using, you know, I was using hard, and I was scared. I was real scared, and I ran. I just left my mother, her husband, my father had just died, and I had nothing to do with her. I disappeared. I went to the other side of the country because I was scared. I was scared that I couldn't measure up to what I thought I was supposed to do. All I really needed to do was be there for her, but I didn't know. I was scared. A few months later, I was broke and hungry and still scared. And I had heard that my mother moved, and I didn't have nowhere to go. So I went to my mother's house where I thought she lived, and I knocked on the door, and I thought, this is going to be really stupid if it's not her house, you know. And she opened the door, and her eyes lit up, and she hugged me really tight, and she kissed me on my neck. And she said, go wash up. I'll make you something to eat. And I went into the bathroom at her house, and I looked in the mirror. I had not bathed in a long time. And I had these rings around my neck, black rings. And where she kissed me, it was gone. There was a spot where she had kissed me that the dirt was gone. And I thought, man, I'm a piece of shit. I owed my mother tremendous amends, and she loved me unconditionally. Well, when she got sick, I started having to take care of her, and I lived about 30 minutes from her, and I was going there every day. After a while, I bought the house right across the street from her, and I moved across the street from her. The house was a good deal, so it was a good thing, but I thought, I don't know if this is a good idea or not. But I ended up the next 18 months or so taking care of my mom every day. And Then that house caught on fire. And my house caught on fire. And I had to move in a small apartment, and I took her with me. I said, Mom, you got to go. You got to go with me. So we lived in a small apartment, my wife and I and my mother. And I used to call Jeff and say, I don't know if I can do this. You know, this is hard. This is really hard. I got to work all day, and then I come home and do this, and I don't know if I can do this. Jeff told me, you have an opportunity few addicts get. You have an opportunity to make complete amends to your mother. And, you know, it was hard. It was real hard. And I asked for help a lot. But, you know, I did it. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, because when my mother passed away, we had no unfinished business. And that felt good. That felt so good. I'll tell you how hard this was. The first time I had to clean my mother's bottom up, oh my God. I was like, oh, woo, whoa. And, you know, I did it, you know. And then when my wife came home, I told her about it. And I said, I don't think I did a good job. And she was like, why do you say that? And I said, because I couldn't look. And she said, my wife said, that's stupid. And I said, well, I couldn't look. And she said, her stuff looks just like my stuff. You know, this is stupid. So the next time I had to clean my mother up, I looked and I did a really good job. I did. I cleaned her up really good. And when my wife came home from work, I said, you lied! I'm trying to give it away. I'm not sure what it is I'm giving away, but... I'm going to try to wrap this up real quick. There's a line in our basic text. In the We Do Recover section, it says, there is no model of the recovering addict. When the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen. Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. And that's what's happened in my life. So many new possibilities, you know. God. You know, I went from the guy they were going to fire at work to a go-to guy. Believe me, that scared the shit out of me. I wasn't familiar with responsibility, you know. It turned out good, you know. Without even knowing what was happening. You know, Woody Allen said, 80% of life is showing up. You guys taught me how to show up. I didn't used to show up, you know? You guys taught me how to show up, and things started changing, you know, for the better. I have this huge gift of recovery. It's called happily married. When I came into these rooms, I didn't know anybody who was happily married. I didn't know anybody that I would put in that category. You know, I was the first person in my family ever to get divorced that anyone could remember. People in my family stayed married forever and hated each other, you know? And today I am happily married, and it just kind of blows me away. My wife's a recovering addict. She has 23 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous, and I met her in a meeting. And, yeah. And we've been married for, how many years? Oops. 13 years. We've been married for 13 years. And, man, it has been amazing to, you know, I guess I hit the jackpot on this, you know. Someone that gets me, I get her, and we practice spiritual principles in our home. And, God, I never knew anything like that existed for people. And I am so grateful for it. I want to talk one more little bit about the ultimate gift that came from being here. You know, it says, you know, in our book that the only thing NA promises is freedom from active addiction. But I was told that if we get that and we do what it takes to keep it, anything is possible. Anything is possible. If we lose the desire to use and find a new way of life, anything is possible. And I've been amazed at what happened. And this is one of them inside things that you really, you know, if you don't know me, you can't tell it happened. But if you know me, you know it happened. I can look anybody in the eye today. And that's thanks to you. That's thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. When I came in these rooms, I looked at the floor. Because I didn't like me. And I didn't like you. You know, the thing they say, you know, we'll love you until you can learn to love yourself. Y'all did it. Y'all did it. And today, I'm okay with me. And that makes me, you know, fit company for anybody, you know? I am no longer ashamed of me. And God, what a gift. What a tremendous gift. You know, if you're new here, or if you've been here for a while, give yourself a chance. Man, get that freedom that's promised and keep it. Do what's necessary to keep it. Because once we have freedom from active addiction, anything is possible. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Ed.